Today is September 4th, 2023. Current Bitcoin price is $25,785.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
What's going on, Rick?
Oh, just not doing any labor on Labor Day. How about yourself?
I think I'm about the same. I got up this morning and did a workout, and now I'm going to do a podcast, and then, I don't know, hopefully not do a lot of labor today.
Maybe just a touch of yard work?
No, I did some yard work on Wednesday. So I got that kind of taken care of. I mean, there's other things that I should probably do, but I'm not doing it today.
Gotcha.
Not doing it today. So, and actually, kind of to get this going, I had texted you earlier in the week. I don't know if you'd seen the Bitcoin price after there was an announcement that came from Grayscale versus the SEC. Like, Bitcoin had gone up to like 27,000, almost 28.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, we're back down to where we were before. Which, I mean, Grayscale... We've talked about them before. They have a big Bitcoin trust account in the system, basically. I don't know how else to put it. But it's an ETF in everything but name, and it's not really meant for retail investors. And that Grayscale Bitcoin trust actually trades at a fair discount compared to Bitcoin. I want to say it's like 24% less than what the actual Bitcoin price is. And so I think they've been wanting to push for a long time to get an ETF, a spot Bitcoin ETF in place for that trust. Because I want to say Grayscale is one of the largest holders of Bitcoin out there. I think they're even bigger than MicroStrategy. So they really want to get that secured where they can actually match that price target. And they won a court case against the SEC because the SEC denied their spot Bitcoin ETF due to concerns about manipulation, which is what they say all the time. But they said, well, how can you honor a futures ETF if you cannot honor, you know, a spot ETF? And so the court ruled in favor of Grayscale, saying, hey, yeah, that's right. Like, I mean, if you've got this in place, you should allow this in place. So, I mean, the win was kind of a win, but it wasn't a huge win because at the same time, all it means is that the SEC has to go back and re-review the account, or, you know, the application that they issued.
So basically, you just need to come up with another reason to deny them.
Yeah. Basically, they've got to come up with a more creative reason to say, no, you cannot have this ETF in place or this spot ETF. So, I mean, at first it was... Everybody was really excited about it, and I think once they kind of sunk in that it really doesn't have any teeth behind it, I think it kind of tampered markets again.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. So, yeah, I mean, the SEC, they just don't like crypto in general. So, I don't know if they're trying to gum up the works for now, but we'll see when they change their mind about that.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the other big things too that was supposed to happen this week was all those Bitcoin filings that we were supposed to get for those spot ETFs, they all got delayed on the same day, which was kind of unprecedented. If you look back on our picture from the Discord chat where they had all the timelines, we had a bunch that were supposed to be getting information coming through on the approval or denial starting like September 1st. We had the BlackRock one, which was supposed to be, you know, where first deadline was September 2nd, they all got pushed back to middle of October. So we'll have to kind of wait and see what's going to happen with that. From what I'm understanding, like most of the analysts, what they're predicting at this point is that there's a 74% chance that we'll get a Bitcoin ETF approved this year. And then the possibility that increases to 95% starting in 2024. So, and we've kind of talked about this before, like if we see one going to happen, more than likely it's all going to align either the beginning of 2024 or, you know, kind of maybe in the first quarter of 2024. And that would make sense. I mean, because they would have to level the playing field for everybody. If they're gonna put a hole in the wall of water, right? Do they want to just put one hole and let all that water come through, or do they want to put as many holes as possible and let that water come through? So we'll have to wait and see. I don't know if it'll happen this year. I think they're going to buy as much time as possible. And I think they have as much time as they need with Grayscale's result. I think they can take up to another 8 months to decide again. So.
Yeah. That's, yeah, they're, like I said, they're just going to gum up the works.
Yeah.
They have no intention of helping that out.
No, I agree. And I mean, and like you said, I mean, they don't like it. They can't necessarily control it, but I mean, BlackRock is always the wild card in this whole thing. I think we've had attempts. I think Gemini was the first one to attempt to do an ETF, a spot Bitcoin ETF. And that was over 10 years ago now that they've been trying to get one passed.
Wow.
So, yeah, we'll have to kind of wait and see. So, unprecedented that they delay them all at the same time, but they did. So, now we're waiting for a deadline of October 17th to see what they're going to say at that point. Are they going to kick the can further down the road again, or are they going to let one through? And I don't know what they're going to decide. Jay Clayton, former head of the SEC, said that it's inevitable at this point that one will get approved, but the question is timing again.
Well, when it comes to BlackRock, they definitely know which politicians they need to buy, or, you know, they probably own a big chunk of the news media and stuff like that. So if they need to put the message out that something needs to happen, they can make it happen.
Yeah, well, and I think you bring up a good point. Like, I don't even know if they necessarily have to buy them. They may just get to dictate. You know, they're like, yeah, we don't have to buy you. Like, this is what we're going to do, and this is what you're going to do. I mean, they're so big. Yeah. So we're still waiting, and I think the market's waiting. I don't think we're going to have, I've said before, I really do think that we'll get 40 to 45,000 by the end of this year. That's looking a little bit more bleaker, especially as we are ending, you know, the third quarter and we're going to enter the fourth. But who knows? I mean, there's I don't see a whole lot in the way of negative stuff that's going to come out about Bitcoin. But I could be completely wrong. There could be another black swan event, but I mean, this is a heavy accumulation period, right? We talked about that in the previous episodes where this is the least volatile Bitcoin has been in a very long time, because even the $30,000 to $25,000, $26,000 range, that's not a huge swing for Bitcoin.
Oh. No, I do think it is. I mean, in the short term, I don't know where Bitcoin's going to go. I do suspect that it's going to go down, just kind of how trends are going.
Yeah.
And we've been waiting for something to happen, some type of event. And when that happens, it's going to take everything down. It's just in the immediate aftermath, what's going to rise to the top and what's going to crash or get destroyed. That's kind of what I'm looking at. Granted, I do believe that Bitcoin will, you know, if there is some type of event like that, long-term Bitcoin is going to do fairly well.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously, I think I agree with you. I think I've been a big, and especially as more and more people kind of understand Bitcoin a little bit better, I do see that as kind of an inevitable kind of win that's going to take place as to what that looks like, right? Like, I mean, what does that manipulation look like? When you have such a finite supply of Bitcoin, you know, 21 million that'll total ever exist, period. And you've got, you know, more millionaires than what there are Bitcoin in the world. And then billionaires, I mean, they're kind of growing at the same time. Like, there's not even enough out there for them all to have one. What does that look like eventually? I don't know. It's I get excited for it. And then at the same time, it's like, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen with it? I don't know if something better is going to come along. I can't imagine anything that's more hard in that sense. But you've got a lot of different things going on. Something that I didn't talk about this before we actually got going, but X, formerly known as Twitter, Elon Musk's X, actually, they've gotten a lot of permissions recently over this past week to allow financial type operations within the X platform, and that includes digital assets as well.
Yeah. Well, X, I mean, he's relabeling it, right?
Yeah.
And at first I was like, man, I like the idea of what Twitter is and a little tweet and all that stuff. It makes sense, but it looks like the direction that he's taking that company is going to be something totally different.
Yeah, it looks like, to me, it looks almost something like WeChat out of China.
Yeah, I've never seen WeChat, but I've heard it. I mean, that's probably the biggest social media platform just because that's what you have to use in China, right?
Yeah. But I mean, you get to do it all in there. Like you can do all your business, not necessarily business, but you can transfer funds. It's basically taking the communication aspects of Twitter and combining it with some of the like Venmos and the PayPals and putting it all in one.
Which is pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know he's starting to pay content creators on there too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I mean, it's for some of them, it's actually kind of lucrative, right? Because I mean, you pay your, I think it's $10 a month and you actually can get more back based on how influential you are.
Yeah. You know, how much engagement you get.
Yeah, for sure. And then you had something you wanted to bring up too about, you know, economic conditions in China.
Yeah. I've just been kind of looking at some of this stuff. I think we need to, do a deeper dive before I go too far into it. But, you know, the Evergrande bankruptcy filing, the last episode we talked about, or maybe it was the episode before that. But there's some interesting things happening in China. I mean, we all know that there's everything about China is just, it's like Bernie Madoff was a country. That's basically the Chinese system. It's just all smoke and mirrors. There's ghost cities where they've built unbelievable, you know, amounts of land and developments that are just empty. Yeah. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening in China. And their real estate makes a substantial portion of their GDP versus, you know, other countries like America. It's like 17% of our GDP is real estate, whereas China is 30%. So there seems to be something going on in China. And I don't want to go into specifics right now, but I'm just wanting to kind of paint a picture real quick. Like in 2008, when the American housing system crashed, that basically drug down the economies of the entire world.
Right.
And, you know, fast forward 15 years later, I mean, it was in October 2008, we're September 2023. I mean, the world economy is even more integrated with each other. So, you know, if there's something that happens in China, you know, we're all going to feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you bring up a good point, because I want to say it's been roughly about 18 months ago, we had the huge thing with Evergrande in China, where there were, you know, insolvency, all that stuff, and the Chinese government or central bank stepped in, issued them money, you know, did the typical bailout thing. And now we had that collapse that we talked about before within the United States, where Evergrande actually filed for bankruptcy here. And, you know, there was the fear of the contagion spreading, right? And then all of a sudden, again, it's gone quiet, like nobody's talking about it. And we've talked about the real estate market here. Like, it's not looking pretty. Like, there's a lot of things. Something I found interesting, too, like when I paid my mortgage this month, every month I've been able to see kind of what the valuation of my home is, according to them. And it's not there this month. They didn't show it.
That's, That's interesting.
Yeah, it had been showing up for months and months and months. Like, it, you know, I could kind of follow the trends and see what the market was doing. And this month, it didn't show what that, what their estimated value of my home was, which I thought was kind of interesting. I'm like, why did they pull that data? Why is it not there? The other thing, too, that came out of China recently, because China has been so hot and cold with Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space in general, the courts, I guess what would be the equivalent of the Supreme Court in China, said that Bitcoin is the equivalent of personal property in China. So if there is thefts or anything like that, they will attempt to prosecute on it. And now, you know, we talked about this probably quite a while back, where China, in Hong Kong especially, they're actually starting to open up the cryptocurrency markets there again, or accepting applications. So, you know, are they looking at something where they're like, okay, well, let's start to divest back into it again? We pushed all the energy production or the mining production almost completely out of China. Let's start to pile back in. I don't know.
I don't know if that. I mean, they are ruled by the Chinese Communist Party still, so they could be as schizophrenic as possible, and that's just how it goes.
Yeah. No, that's true. Very true. Yeah, I mean, those are the big things that I saw this week, and I think you bring up a good point with China and the real estate market there, just how fake it all is.
Yes.
You know, and we still haven't seen, like, we've heard some things from BRICS, but we haven't seen exactly what their currency is going to be yet, or how that's going to work, other than that it's going to be local, whatever the hell that means. So everything is kind of just hanging on a thread. When we look at the markets in general, let's see. Dow Jones, 0.33%. It's in the positive. I mean, obviously, there's not a whole lot going on today because it's a holiday in the United States. The VIX is up 5.5%.
That's not good.
The DXY is down, so the dollar is down 0.11%. Apple is up 0.85%. Tesla is down 5%. Netflix is up 1%. Oil looks like it's down 0.6%. 0.06%, pardon me. Gold is down $85.93 for oil.
85, wow.
Gold is down negative 0.05%. Silver is down 0.67%. Let's see. The Russian ruble is down 0.41%. Bitcoin currently is down 0.75%. I mean, but that's just based off from yesterday. So, yeah, I mean, it's markets are kind of not a whole lot going on today. Everybody's kind of taking the day in the United States, at least anyways. But SPX is up 0.18%. And it looks like the NASDAQ is down 0.07%. So,
not enough for Michael Burry to make any money off his bet.
No, we still haven't seen that collapse yet. But I mean, I keep on hearing more and more that, you know, that there's that collapse on the horizon. We talked about that up the beginning of this year. And it's crazy to believe that we're already in September. We're almost at the end of Q3. So how long does it hold together?
No, it's been holding on. So, you know, it can keep going. It can stay insolvent or irrational longer than you can stay solvent. So,
yeah, which is why I personally, like, you've got to have the feeling of, you know what, just buy and hold Bitcoin. And that's not financial advice, but just buy some. You don't have to buy a lot.
Nope.
When you don't have to have a whole Bitcoin to be able to benefit from Bitcoin, especially as, you know, and that's one of the big things right now too, is that current prices the way they are, even if, okay, so we go through this next bull market, Bitcoin goes up to, say, 300,000. We'll say it 10x's, right? $300,000. If it comes back down again, it'll probably come back down to like $60,000 to $70,000 range. It's going to get harder and harder to buy any kind of substantial position within Bitcoin. So you need to buy while it's cheap. But people never want to buy when it's cheap. People want to buy it whenever it's expensive. I had a discussion with a VP within my company the other day about Bitcoin, because he knows that I've been following it for a long time. I've been telling him for years to buy, He's like, well, didn't the market fall out again? It's like, but that's the time to buy. Like, if you're not paying attention, like, we've had this discussion every 4 years. You needed to buy it. He's like, oh, if only I had a crystal ball. I'm like, you got one.
We're going to rename you Crystal.
Yeah.
No, that's, you know, the 4 year cycle, you know, it kind of repeats. And we're about to go into the halving.
Mm-hmm.
And the halving is basically the miners get half of what they got before for the same amount of work.
Yeah.
Well, not even the same amount of work, because Bitcoin is hitting all time highs in hash rate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just take that. Fast forward to whatever the hash rate's going to be in May, and then they're going to start getting half of what they're getting now.
Yep. Yeah, in order for them to stay solvent, like, the price of Bitcoin has got to increase.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It becomes much more scarce. It's harder to get a hold of. I mean, just on that scarcity level, it's going to demand, it's going to create a price increase. I mean,
yeah, sure. It's a supply shock. Yeah. I mean, basically, when you had X amount of Bitcoin being produced daily, you know, where it's basically right now, I want to say it's six point something Bitcoin every block, 6.25, something along those lines. It's going to get cut in half to where it's 3 something every 10 minutes. So, I mean, that's a huge reduction that takes place. And again, after the next halving, it's going to be less than one. And if you remember, if we talked about this a long time ago, we did the Plan B's stock to flow model. With this happening, Bitcoin's going to have a much harder stock to flow model than even gold at that point. So take with that and do with that what you will. But I recommend, and I'm trying to like talk as many people into just buying $100 worth, $200 worth at this current time. You don't have to go full bore into it, but just buy a little bit and don't worry about the price. Don't look at it again. Check it again in 4 years.
Yep. And then just buy a wallet.
Yeah.
And use that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Get a hardware wallet. And, you know, maybe here pretty soon we'll have some merch. You can buy a t-shirt that shows, yeah, you bought some Bitcoin. Yeah.
Or maybe we'll advertise different hardware wallets and links to things that we believe in.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So that's all really we've got today. We want to take the rest of the day and not do the labor that we discussed earlier. So
that's right.
Thank y'all for listening.
Bye.